The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Good morning and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle Podcast. I'm Sammy Jacobs. Along with me is TJ Inman, and Andy Graham is back for more. We are previewing the 2022 Big Ten Media Days, focusing on IU. If you have not seen the schedule, Big Ten Media Days starts tomorrow, July 26th. IU specific, Tom Allen will go at noon. I believe it's all covered on BTN and maybe even ESPN. But Tom Allen goes at noon from the main podium. Press conference with Commissioner Warren starts at 10:15 a.m. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of talk about expansion and things like that, but we're going to focus on IU today. And then IU is also sending Cam Jones, AJ Barner, and Tywin Mullen as their student representatives. They'll be at the side podiums, at starting at 1:45, 2:45. And then again, the side session with Coach Allen. I know BTN pulls students as well during that. So check out Big Ten Network. They'll have you covered there as well. We'll have a man on the ground in Zion Brown. He's one of our freelance students over at the IU Media School. So thank you to him. Thank you to Dr. Galen Clavio for hooking us up with him. And he'll be our boots on the ground there. But Andy, I wanted to ask you first, going into a Media Days, I call it talking season. What was your, mindset going into a Big Ten Media Days, especially ahead of an important IU football season?
Well, to be honest, it was to avoid the stock answers as much as possible. I mean, people are going to talk about how hard they worked in the off season and how good the newcomers look and all of that kind of stuff. I wanted to get to more specific things about, Indiana, but most especially look for good stories, look for good personal interest stories. After I did a number of media days over the years, my impression was that you basically heard the same kind of stuff every year. So what you tried to do was to move beyond that and really, find out who AJ Barner was as a person, and maybe there's a good sort of story that Cam Jones can tell you that you know about in his background. And so I looked for things like that. But yeah, the main thing from an Indiana point of view this time is a little bit tied into those stock answers, because the guys are going to be talking about, how hard they've worked in the off season and how hungry they are and excited they are about the season upcoming. But I think especially in Indiana's case, that's really actually a topic that I would want to visit this year is what did the pain of last year do to the team? How hungry is the team coming in this year? And Indiana's back to that position where nobody's going to be believing in them. Nobody's going to have any expectations. They're going to be picked near or at the bottom of the Big Ten East. And how do the players, what do they think about that after having gone like 14-5 in regular season play the two previous campaigns? Last year obviously was an abject disaster. And so that is something that, specific to this season, that has to be discussed, and hopefully the players will be willing to do so, and hopefully Tom will be also.
TJ, what would you, if you had the microphone at Big Ten Media Days, what's, your one or two top questions going in?
Well, I think Andy certainly should be deferred to on that as, professional in that regard. And I think he's 100% right. The stock answers you hear that from every program, every single Big Ten media days. Your goal, really, as a fan or as a person asking the questions, is to kind of read between the lines on what you can and kind of look at, okay, what are they not talking about and how can I get them to talk about those things? For me, I think that Andy's question about what did last year, just the kind of the shock of coming off the high of going to a bowl game and really having a top 25 ranking and national attention for the first time in a long time, the shock of going from that to complete and total failure of a season, how do you bounce back from that? And what during the off season specific steps were taken to get to that? And I would ask of Andy here, when you look at the players that are chosen to represent Indiana at Media Day, what do the specific choices for this year tell you about those players? And the main guy that jumps out to me is A.J. Barner. What does his inclusion as a representative at Media Day for IU, what does that tell you about A.J. Barner and possibly his upcoming role on this team, kind of through your eyes and what you think through the eyes of the coaching staff, him being chosen, says?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting question, TJ. I think that it doesn't necessarily augur, it doesn't necessarily portend that Walt Bell is going to be using the tight end all the time. We could read between the lines and maybe try and guess a little bit about Walt Bell's approach to offense. But you know as well as I do, when those questions get asked tomorrow, you're not going to get a lot of revealing answers because, frankly, Indiana doesn't want Illinois to know what kind of approach Walt Bell's going to have to offense. So they're going to be guarded in terms of what they say about that. But, you know, perhaps AJ himself might be willing to talk a little bit about his role. And if he is, that will be very interesting. The main takeaway I had from his inclusion is just a result of what I've heard from staff people just talking about AJ Barner. They think he's an NFL guy. I don't want to put too much pressure on the kid, but, you know, they think he's potentially a guy that's going to play on Sundays. And yeah, I mean, that to me is an interesting thing. Plus, you know, you're taking three players. You don't want to take both of the quarterbacks who are vying for the quarterback position. I think that you don't want to just take one of them and indicate which guy is going to win that job, because I don't think they know who's going to win that job yet. So most times, a lot of the times, you're going to take a quarterback up to media days, but not this year. And so the fact that A.J. Barner is the lone representative of the offense is both a credit to how highly they think of A.J. Barner, but also I think a little bit of we're not going to talk a lot about offense or what we're going to be doing on offense or who's going to be the quarterback at the media days.
They've done it before where they haven't sent the quarterback, I think 2019 might have been the last time with Peyton Ramsey and Michael Penix. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I think fans kind of get caught up in it. Oh, they don't have a quarterback, or they don't have a starting quarterback, or, you know, they haven't made a decision yet, which is true this time. I don't think they've made a decision.
One thing that's interesting is I think, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if Indiana plays both guys and kind of rides the hot hand, to be honest with you. I mean, I think they're interesting. They have different strengths. And we can talk more about that, and we probably should. But don't be overly surprised. And people say, well, if you're playing two quarterbacks, that means you have no quarterback. I don't necessarily think that's true, and I think we've seen in recent years with Indiana that isn't necessarily true.
With some, you know, LSU won a national title with two quarterbacks in 2007. You saw Florida win with two quarterbacks in 2006. There are a lot of teams who have done it, you know, they've done it with two quarterbacks and have tried to go forward like that.
And maybe even three, because we have a kid who's now playing wide receiver who has a quarterback background, and I wouldn't be surprised if he has a package for him to come in and play a little quarterback on the fly. I mean, think about this. You've got a wide receiver now who's a former quarterback. So you put Donovan out wide, but then he can switch back into the backfield while he's out there, and that doesn't give the defense a chance to substitute. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying my mind thinks about that. And yeah, sure, we would obviously all love to see one quarterback emerge as a dominant force and so great that he's just going to play every snap. I'm not sure that's going to be the case here, but that doesn't mean the guys that we do play aren't capable and aren't going to give us some interesting options in regard to how the offense plays.
Yeah, and I think, one of the knocks I had on Nick Sheridan and maybe a little bit on Tom Allen in the past is, getting some garbage time reps for their quarterback. We saw Tuttle play, in blowout games, but he was mainly handing the ball off. And I think that came back and haunted them you can't take the ball game, for example, because he was throwing with one arm. But
well, the arm he was thrown with was had a separated shoulder. So he had one good arm, but that wasn't his throwing arm. So.
It was like, you saw him against Idaho, you saw him a little against Iowa and things like that. But he was mainly handing the ball off. He threw the ball, at the one big play to AJ Barner, but then. Penix gets hurt, and that it happens. Quarterbacks get hurt in this league, especially, in the Big Ten when you're playing really, really good defenses week in and week out.
Jack didn't look ready
sometimes.
No, he didn't. And Jack had to play hurt too. I mean, Jack was playing hurt. So it's like, I've said this before, and I could be wrong about this, but I don't think so. The only window in which we've seen Jack be fully prepared to step on the field, fully healthy and ready to go, was when he came in for Mike Penix when Mike injured his knee against Maryland. And then the next week he played at Wisconsin. And that's pretty much it. That's really about the only time during Jack's career here where he's been totally healthy and ready to go and had a chance to play. So, for me, that snapshot is actually pretty encouraging. I think he played well in that context, but I don't know if that's the real Jack Tuttle or not, but we're liable to find out here. And obviously Connor Bazelak's a kid. If we're just going to talk quarterbacks real quickly, might as well, we're on the topic. He threw for 5,000 yards plus at Missouri already. He's very experienced, co-SEC freshman of the year. It hasn't been in the locker room at IU as long. I mean, you look at the leadership component, the guys know Jack well by now, and they don't know Bazelak as well. It's just going to be fascinating. I think they both bring different things to the table. And we saw a video over the weekend that Bazelak can bring three-point shooting to the table, but that's the wrong sport. But in any case,
he might be the best three-point shooter on campus.
I mean, what was it, like 7 in a row or something like that on the video? Looked pretty doggone good.
I think he hit 10 in like 27 seconds.
It just kind of reminded me, like, these guys are a different level athlete. I mean, all of these guys were stars in high school, and I'm sure Bazelak was the star basketball player in high school, and I'm sure Tuttle was a multi-sport athlete too, because most of them are. But how that shakes out is going to be really interesting. And as I said, yeah, sure, we would all prefer for one guy to take the reins and just be the kind of dominant force back there, and that might happen. I mean, I'm not saying it won't, but I'm also saying I think we could see both guys.
Yeah, you mentioned the Wisconsin game. That's an example. Yes, Indiana won that game. Jack Tuttle played very well, But I still don't think that that really shows us what Jack Tuttle may or may not be capable of because of the context of that game. That was a game where you're on the road. Indiana knew Wisconsin's offense was not going to be able to move the ball against IU's defense. That was a really bad Wisconsin offense. And Tom Allen knew that and approached that game with the proper game plan of, we are going to play extremely conservatively. We are not going to beat ourselves. We're not going to take any risks whatsoever. And we believe that if we do that and execute this game plan, we will have a chance to win in the fourth quarter. That's what they did. And they came out on top. But, you know, I don't think that that really illustrates what Jack Tuttle might or might not be capable of outside of, if given a game plan and he's healthy, he's able to execute that, which is a very positive quality. But it still really didn't show us whether or not he was capable of leading a high-powered offense. So I mean, he really is a mystery man, despite being on campus for a number of years and having snapshots of action, still somebody that we don't really know what he's capable of.
I think that's valid. I would push back a little bit and say that in that game, for example, just to name a couple of plays. One was the under pressure, kind of off the back foot, exquisitely thrown pass for a touchdown to WAP across. And that's like next level talent and touch on the ball there. And then the bomb that got dropped. That was a great call at the right time. And Tuttle aired it out perfectly. You know, it was like he put a little air under it just to make sure that it wasn't going to be a stretch to catch. And then, of course, it got dropped. But I really liked what I saw there in terms of actual capacity as a quarterback. I saw enough arm strength. I saw enough arm strength. I also saw enough touch that makes me think, he can make the kind of throws that you need to make. But you're right. You're absolutely right in the sense that it's an extremely small sample size. And we really don't know what a fully healthy, ready to go, in command of the offense, stays healthy kind of quarterback Jack Tuttle would be, because we haven't seen that yet.
And don't forget that Miles Marshall.
For good or bad.
Yep.
I mean, if Miles Marshall catches the wide open pass, it's a, you know, stats, the stat sheet says a totally different thing. And I think people are a little bit higher on Jack Tuttle, because there wasn't anybody around him for a mile.
It was like, obviously I feel for Miles. What Miles was a decent player for us here. I don't want to hammer him or anything like that. I wish him the best in his new vistas out there, but that could happen to anybody, but even a great wide receiver occasionally has a drop like that. But it did impact what Tuttle's final numbers looked like. You know, he would have been well over 200 yards passing, I think, if that pass gets caught. Well, it was like a 55-yard pass, something like that would have been, right?
Yeah, something like that.
So, you know, I mean, and you know, his completion percentage was good, but that would have bumped the yardage up and would have given him another touchdown pass in the game. And, I think people would look at the stat sheet a little differently.
But go ahead, TJ.
On the topic of Big Ten Media Days, Andy, is there anybody at Big Ten Media Day that you are, IU or otherwise, just in the conference, anybody that you're interested in hearing from what they actually have to say? I think most of the time everything gets glossed over and one or two guys say something actually interesting that gets, you know, dissected for the next month before games start. On ESPN and wherever else college football is talked about. So is there anybody at Big Ten Media Day that you're interested in hearing what he has to say?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be interested to hear what Commissioner Warren says about expansion. I think that he might be cagey and might give us a bunch of gobbledygook, but that's a fascinating topic right now. I'm gonna as much as I otherwise wouldn't really care very much, I want to hear what Brett Bielema has to say. Yeah, you know, I'm going to listen to the Illinois guys because that game is so important. And I stumbled across the Illinois spring game on Big Ten Network last night and watched some of it because, yeah, we're getting to that point. You know, September 2nd is coming up pretty quickly now. So, yeah, I want to hear what Illinois has to say.
Going on the expansion, Andy, I know we talked about this a little bit before. Where do you think it goes? Is everybody just sitting pat waiting for Notre Dame to make a decision?
Yep. I think that's what's happening right now. I don't know. I mean, I'm not privy to the backroom discussions here at all. So this is all speculative on my part. But I do think there is going to be further expansion at some juncture. It might not happen now. It might not happen this year. It might not happen next year. But I do think it's going to happen. I think, you know, we're going to end up with like three mega conferences eventually. I think eventually the what we have called the Power Five football folks are going to distance themselves and probably divorce themselves from NCAA, from the NCAA. I think that's going to happen at some point. I think the football folks are going to run their own show. They'll have their own rules about, you know, NIL and transfers and everything else, because I think there's been a erosion of faith in the NCAA to be able to successfully regulate it. Now, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean the NCAA is going to go away either. I mean, I would expect the NCAA to continue to administer the NCAA basketball tournament, for example, tournaments, which are, you know, which it does very well. The NCAA conducts championships really well. The NCAA does it very well. The problem has been they haven't been proactive in terms of giving athletes a bigger piece of the pie financially. They haven't been proactive in terms of enforcing the rules that they have, mostly because they've lost in court so often in the last couple of decades. So it's just a fascinating topic. I mean, if I were the Big Ten, I think I would want to go, I would want to secure the West Coast, not just UCLA and USC, as great as that is for the Big Ten. And I do think it's a net positive without doubt. I'd probably want to divide the league, a 20-team league, let's say, into, you know, Eastern and Western sections. It'd be a truly a nationwide league from sea to shining sea. But I would give the Western teams more traditional rivals to play. So I don't know if you want to look at, you want to secure the Bay Area and bring in Stanford and Cal, whether you want to get Phil Knight's money and then the city of Seattle and bring in Oregon and Washington. But I'd be looking at that, partially depending upon what Notre Dame does or doesn't do. Then if you're the SEC, I think the obvious course forward is to look at the football powers on your doorstep in the ACC, such as Clemson and Florida State, Miami, schools like that. North Carolina is going to be an interesting school to see what happens there. If the ACC remains intact, all of this is by the boards. But if the ACC is kind of divided up, it's going to be interesting to see what North Carolina does. Because one thing I think, and this is, I heard an ESPN analyst, you know, called the Big Ten, you know, arrogant or smug about its academic credentials. And that may be true, but it also may be deserved. And if you look at the schools the Big Ten has taken in Southern California and UCLA, both of which are elite research institutions. And then you're looking at schools maybe such as Stanford and Cal, same kind of deal. It tells me that the Big Ten is still interested in the student athlete component of things. That's something I really like. I mean, the whole idea of amateurism has been a myth for a long time. You know, the student athletes have been well compensated via you know, scholarships for a long time, and they get direct value for the effort they put in. And I think they're going to get more rewarded you know, in future. But, you know, so they haven't been amateurs technically for a long time. However, they've been student athletes. And I think what we've seen from the Big Ten expansion, and obviously Notre Dame would fit into this very much so as well. I think that the academic component is very strong in the Big Ten. And I think that will continue when they look to expand further. Sorry, that's a long-winded answer, but it's an interesting topic. And I think that, you know, right now Indiana graduates 92% of its athletes, which is a nice number. It's a healthy number. And I think the Big Ten is determined to continue in that direction.
With the season so far away, Andy, you know, outside of the quarterback battle, outside of getting ready for Illinois, what's the one thing, what's one thing that IU needs to do well, or focus on in fall camp to be successful in 2022?
Well, yeah, you know, I always come back to offensive line play. That's kind of where I'm at as a football fan mm-hmm. and somebody who tries to analyze the game at least a little bit, who's not a coach. But I'm not sure how qualified I am to analyze it. But to me, it's always made perfect sense to really focus on the offensive line. And I'm going to be interested in seeing if Indiana can come up with some kind of running game. To take a little heat off of the quarterbacks, to give themselves a foundation. I think my guess is, looking at Walt Bell's background, he wants to do that. I think Tom Allen wants to do that. And I'll be yep. curious to see whether or not they can do that. How about you, TJ? What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's almost a easy joke at this point. Like, everything comes back to the offensive line, and it's so funny because it's 100% true. I mean, it really, it's not true to say it absolutely doesn't matter who it does anything else. If the offensive line stinks, it won't matter. That's not true. I mean, it's going to matter somewhat. You know, who's at quarterback and what kind of performance the running backs give and all that, but the ceiling is absolutely capped at average to subpar if the offensive line continues to struggle. And I think that what Walt Bell, who we have read and heard, incredibly involved in the offensive line, I think it's very clear, you know, it's not just obvious to us. It's very clear to the coaching staff and Tom Allen and the Walt Bell, it has to change. And it has to change immediately, beginning with the season opener. So what I'm really interested in seeing is what schematic changes does Walt Bell make with the offensive line to accentuate their strengths, as opposed to continuing to do the same thing and just hope they get better. Their strength training and we will, I'm sure, hear at Big Ten Media Days about how guys are in the best shapes of their lives and transform their bodies. And,
right, exactly.
You know, which begs the question, well, what exactly were you doing before last season? But, you know, we're going to hear all that stuff. Every program is going to say that. What Indiana is faced with is you have offensive linemen that, according to recruiting rankings, were pretty well regarded, mm-hmm. especially the younger classes, you know, so mm-hmm. you could have personnel changes there that help make the offensive line level raise up a mm-hmm. notch or two just by way of increased talent on the depth chart. However, where I think you could really see a jump up is if Walt Bell can figure out, okay, this is what these guys do well. Maybe it's, hey, they move well to the outside. Maybe it's, mm-hmm. oh, actually, mm-hmm. If we can figure out a way to, instead of kind of the zone blocking schemes that we saw a year ago, if we can figure out a way to a different way to open up holes, whether that's man blocking, whether that is different stunts up front. I don't know. I'm not an offensive line expert, but I know there's a lot of different ways to play offensive line.
And there's a lot of different ways in which you as an offensive coordinator can line your players up in formations, whether that's pre-snap movement, different personnel on the field, whatever. There's a lot of different ways to go about it. And I'm interested to see how does Walt Bell, with the full off season, now knowing the personnel and what he has in place, how does he accentuate the positives of his offensive linemen to make them better just through coaching?
Yeah, I
agree, then
it's totally
up to the offensive linemen to do it from there. I mean, you can only do so much as a coach, but there is some that he can do. And I don't think Nick Sheridan or Darren Hiller attempted that enough. I thought that it was kind of, well, here's what we got. Let's line it up and see if we're better this week. And shockingly, they weren't. So,
figuring out
how to attack it, you know?
Yeah, let's see if these guys can pull. Let's see if they can trap block. Let's see if they, you know, let's see what they can do. I also think on the other side of the ball, Sammy, a big key for me is like, do we have a pass rusher? Are we able to put pressure on a quarterback, you know, in lieu of a bunch of stunning? I mean, you know, the guy who put the most pressure on the quarterback for us the last couple of years was Micah McFadden, our middle linebacker.
Yep.
You know, because of the way we would stunt him, and he's gone. And I don't know yet whether or not there's anybody on the front line in terms of newcomers or returning players who can really emerge as a pass rusher, but that's really crucial too.
Well, I think a lot of it goes back to defensive play calling. Last year, like the difference between 2020 and 2021 with Charlton Warren was so night and day. It seemed like Warren just lined up and tried to just beat him one-on-one. There was no exotic packages like they had in 2020. If they could get with Tom Allen taking over the defensive play calling, I think it's going to become a more aggressive defense again. And you know, yeah, you lose Micah McFadden, but you have some guys coming back at linebacker who are pretty good. Yeah. Cam Jones, you got Bradley Jennings, Miles Jackson coming back. You have J.H. Tevis on the defensive line who's good at putting pressure up there. You've got the two big defensive tackles coming in from Ole Miss, and if they could clog up the middle, it'll let your athletes, a healthy Tylan Mullen, he was – destroying quarterbacks for what is he 165 pounds soaking wet?
The way he timed his cornerback blitzes was really impressive.
Yeah, so it's I think, you know, on paper the talent is better on defense, on the defensive line and things like that. I think you upgraded there, but you know, I did the biggest difference is going to be how aggressive Tom Allen's going to have this defense, and to me, him taking the defensive play calling, you know, a lot of people say, oh, how do you hire a defensive coordinator but not give him the defensive play calling duties? It's kind of a cheap out move. I don't think so. I think Tom Allen knows how important it is. And I think he was real angry at how last year's defense went. And he said, you know what, if you want things done right, I'm going to do them myself. And I think he was at that point in his career where, you know, Walt Bell's a former head coach, really good offensive coordinator at previous stops. He knows how to run the offense. It's kind of like what Kevin Wilson did with Tom Allen on the defense. You concentrate on your side of the ball. If there's any major issues, you come check with me. If not, let's go play ball. I got the defense and we're going to, you know, hopefully, you know, raise hell out there and get some turnovers, because difference last year.
Yeah, I agree totally with all of that. And I think another thing that comes to mind in regard to the offensive line is like Walt Bell's offense. We don't know what it's going to be. You know, we can speculate. Yep. We've heard some things or whatever, but let's say there are ways that you can help your offensive line in terms of your approach to offense. I mean, we see that up at Purdue with Jeff Brom. I mean, that ball gets out quickly. They play fast. And that helps, I think, their offensive line play at a successful level for them. So that's another thing that's kind of a wild card in regard to offensive line play is if Indiana has a situation where their scheme is such that the ball gets out quickly, well, that helps the offensive line, you know. So we'll see. But that's another thing that As TJ was saying, you have new coaches, and you get a handle on your personnel, and you see what they can do and what they're not as good at doing, and then you adjust your approach accordingly. So hopefully we'll see some of that, where the approach itself helps the offensive line play at a good level.
I 100% agree. Again, we're getting ready for Big Ten Media Days. Starts tomorrow on Big Ten Network. Tom Allen will address the national media on the podium at noon from 12 to 12:15, or right about then, depending on how on schedule they stay. You have Big Ten Network covering it as well. They'll have side sessions with Allen and the three players, Cam Jones, Tywin Mullen, and A.J. Barner up there as well. Andy, thank you for joining us on the podcast again. We'll have you on again as the season gets closer, leading up to that game against Illinois. TJ, always great to have you on the podcast as well as a co-host. So thank you guys for talking.
Appreciate it very much. Really enjoyed it.
And we'll have everything covered for Big Ten Media Days tomorrow. On Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. We'll have our top five questions heading into Media Day posting later this afternoon as well. So thank you guys, and keep coming back to HoosierHuddle.com.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh my, look at that, he is! And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.